This is the Boxing Betting Show with Tom Craze.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of the Boxing Betting Show. I'm your host, Tom Craze. As this is the last show of 2020, I wanted to mark it with a bit of a retrospective, a look back at the year in boxing and in particular the headline betting stories, the big wins that grabbed our attention and the biggest upsets by the numbers in a year that was punctuated by and interrupted by a crisis the sport has had to do its best to adapt to. There's quite a lot to get through, and so to help me out with this, I thought I'd invite back to the podcast one of my guests from season one, professional bettor, all-round nice guy, and of course, a man of mystery to at least most of you if you follow him on Twitter. Fight Ghost, welcome back to the show.
Tom, so good to talk to you. I cannot believe, my friend, that it's been 15 months. When we looked at back at that first episode, I guess with the pandemic and everything that happened in the world, I thought we had just spoke yesterday, my friend. So 15 months have gone by. Wow. But it's great to chat to you again.
Yeah, all concept of time has kind of skipped us by. And that will be, I think that will be borne out by some of the discussion that we're going to get into now. The reason that I've got you on is, well, it kind of goes without saying that we've had a very strange year, but this show, or certainly this individual podcast, is the last boxing betting show of 2020. Now, we've still got a few, we've still got a few boxing shows to come this year. There's the traditional Japanese New Year's Eve jamboree, let's say, Ioka Tanaka, which is going to be great. Obviously, Canelo Smith this weekend, and obviously a few smaller shows as well. But I thought it would be nice to do a bit of a retrospective, a bit of a kind of look back at the year that was in terms of betting, you know, a 2020 year in review from a betting standpoint, and particularly in terms of the bigger upsets that have come along the way. Now, I say a year in review, really, of course, we're looking at, what, 8-9 months or less in certain countries and certain jurisdictions. I got a really interesting stat to kind of back up this point, and a credit to this goes to Gray, editor at BoxRec. Shout out to Gray for helping out with this. I asked Gray for the total number of shows that took place in the US in 2019 and the total number of shows that took place in the UK in 2019. And then again, the same figure in 2020, how many shows took place, professional boxing shows that is, took place in 2020 in the US and how many in the UK, just to kind of get an idea of the kind of collateral damage that lockdown caused to boxing and the pandemic caused to boxing, just in terms, and this is in terms of professional shows. Obviously this isn't amateur, you know, all the kind of knock-on effects that it had as well. USA 2019, 604 professional boxing shows over a 52-week year, of course. That's pretty healthy, I would say. In 2020, that's down to 238, so a 61% drop. In the UK, 272 professional boxing shows in 2019. This year, only 81 professional shows in the UK. That's a 70% drop, and that's really depressing when you think about it. I think obviously the promoters who brought it back on both sides of the Atlantic have done a great job, I think, and obviously, you know, I'm just talking in terms of numbers here with regard to the US and UK. That's, you know, expand that out to other countries, and that drop and that trend will obviously kind of ripple through as well. We're kind of talking almost, you know, at least two-thirds smaller than we were in 2019. So it's a much, much smaller sample size, I think, is what I'm trying to say in terms of what we're going to be evaluating here. The way we're going to do this, I thought would be a good idea, we'll see how it pans out, is to talk about kind of the really big name upsets and the notable upsets, and then kind of segue that into what will be in kind of good time-honored fashion, a reverse order chart countdown, and ending with the biggest upset of the year. And it'll be interesting, actually, if for anyone listening, to see if you can guess what that is, either before we start or when we get down to number two or three, to kind of know which one we've kind of not got to yet. I think, Ghost, we'll start with one of the biggest fights of the year, Teofimo Lopez, Vasily Lomachenko. Lopez, I've got down here, was +375, so 7-2 and above in UK fractional pricing. Big upset that not many people saw coming, of course, but by the prices, not an astronomical upset. It was a fight that not many people saw going to decision for Lopez. It was either going to be, you know, a wide Lomachenko decision, or some people thought, okay, he's going to rough up Lomachenko. He could stop him potentially early, potentially mid rounds, but not many people called a Lopez decision. What were your thoughts on the odds for that fight, and did it shock you?
It did a bit. And before we start with Lopez, I just want to thank you for the idea for actually the thesis today, which was, as you know, I do a upsets list for a number of years now, Tom, and people have seemed to enjoy it for, gosh, I don't know exactly, but probably 7 or 8 years now. And it was interesting in looking back, and you and I can get into this as we get closer to the top, in looking at the numbers and why there were less upsets this year and why the upsets were not as big this year. And you had some very good theories about that, as did I. But it is interesting to look back and see the number of shows being much less. And as you stated those stats, I started to think how grateful I was for even those 81 shows in the UK, because after all, that's how the fighters get paid. And that's how we as punters make money. And I'm extremely grateful for any of the opportunities. Teofimo Lopez, I had at plus 375. Now, when I quote these numbers, I understand we should say up front for many of your listeners that I'm just quoting an overall price that I've seen, whether that be the best price I find at pro boxing odds or whether that was a widely available price. Obviously, I know people will get better prices or worse prices. So guys, we're just kind of summing up the year here. Congratulations to you if you're able to find a higher number than this. And I'm more than willing to listen to criticisms or adjustments. This is for everyone to share online. This list will be posted in the coming weeks, but Tom and I thought it might be nice to tackle it first here in audio form. My first note on Tio is I found it interesting, Tom, that if you looked at it, that list there that I sent you, Lopez, Povetkin, and Joyce, all three pretty solid upsets this year, all three around the same range of price, interesting enough. So maybe we'll discuss those other two as we get to them. But as far as Teofimo, it was interesting because when the line opened, I was always a backer of Teofimo in this spot. Not that I thought that he would win the fight necessarily, but you're always talking about probability on this show. And I always thought he had a better opportunity than those odds suggested, given his size. Loma, as you know, him and Usyk, two of my all-time favorites, if you followed my account for many years. But he was never, I didn't believe that Loma was elite, his elite, his version of elite, his prime at this weight class. So Teofimo proved to be, yes, a very tough puzzle for him. So I was on Lopez in this fight. The decision I saw available at about plus 1200, I wasn't smart enough to take the decision, but I was pleased with this result. And I thought, as you and I go through the list here, don't worry, I'm going to let you know the ones I was on the other side of. I own my losses as well. But I was on Teofimo in this spot. How did you look at this fight, and were you surprised by the result?
I felt that Lomachenko would do enough. If someone was going to ask me to predict a result or an outcome, I would have said a Lomachenko decision. I just felt that it would be a kind of man versus boy type scenario. Lomachenko never really got started. And well, he did eventually get started, but by that point, it was far too late. And full credit to Lopez, even when Lomachenko did get started, I think it was either the 11th or 12th round that Lopez stood there and really was happy to trade with him and won, I think, fairly emphatically the 12th round, if I remember. Incredibly impressive performance. And what I like about the Lopez story is that you kind of see it more on social media. You know, when a prospect is coming through, this is the guy who's going to take over, I guess, pun intended. Lopez did that a couple of years ago, very big push from Top Rank, you know, the hashtag the takeover, this guy is legit. And you think, okay, yeah, he's exciting. And then he's kind of got the social media friendly knockouts and he does the floss and, you know, it's all of that kind of stuff. But very few actually deliver on that hype. And for Lopez to do what he did, you know, blitzing through Richard Comey, and then I guess even that Nakatani win looks better in hindsight now, doesn't it? And then to do that against Lomachenko, it was quite satisfying in a way, just because it was nice that someone came good on that promise. I think what I'll do at this point, you've kind of given a benchmarking in terms of where these prices have come from. ProBoxingOdds.com is a great resource. There's I think it's Best Fight Odds, which is the MMA equivalent as well, I think run by the same people. But it is for the UK listeners, it is a little bit US focused sometimes. It has firms on there that we don't have access to in the UK. And certainly it's missing firms on there that we do have access to in the UK. So it's not an encyclopedic, it's not completely comprehensive. As Ghost said, there are going to be some discrepancies. And if you're one of the people who say, well, actually, I got on this guy at 13-2 and you said he was 6-1, then yeah, that's just the nature of the beast, isn't it?
And also, Tom, I should just make a disclaimer about the limited markets. I have listed in parentheses, you know, there are often times where some limited markets are available where I do realize I wanted to add it to the list. Maybe it was not widely available. So you will see a couple fights on this list when it's posted later in the week that say in parentheses limited market. And that's just to say that the odds were available via Paddy Power or one of the firms, but not for very long and not that many punters could get down on it. But I wanted it as an overall kind of overview for entertainment purposes of the year for us to look back and just say, wow, that was available at that price, or what did I get it at? It's just for punters to kind of go back, look back on the year, which I think is always fun and healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I said it on a very recent podcast. It's very nice when you kind of get a big win come in. And I said that in relation to the Joyce outright win and the Joyce 7-12 that we really liked as well. But those are not should not be anyone's kind of bread and butter, where you can kind of make a consistent profit over time and you know, with steady kind of self-improvement, is by getting the right prices on the shorter plays, you know, eking out the value on the favorite. You know, it's lovely. And when you do, and it's quite satisfying when you hit a big price winner. But like you sent this list through and I kind of looked through it and I was like, yeah, I wasn't on that one. No, I wasn't on that one either. And kind of went through, and towards the bottom of the list, there were a few more. But, you know, the reason that these, certainly the upsets at the very top of the list are the price they're on, is because no one's backing them. You know, if there was any significant money coming on them, they wouldn't be 10-1. They wouldn't be, I'm talking in terms of outright odds here, they wouldn't be, you know, 12-1 and so on. And so when, an 8-1 shot wins, you can't really beat yourself up about not being on it, because unless you've got some kind of inside knowledge, and a lot of these fights we're going to go into are quite low key, that, you know, under the radar type fights, it is what it is. And everyone's kind of making a best guess. And that includes the odds makers and, you know, the sharps as well.
I kind of did the same thing you did, Tom. Yeah. I would look through the list and go, gosh, wasn't on that one. Wasn't on that one. But I did take pride in the fact that I didn't lay any of these favorites like I may have when I was first starting this a decade ago, you know? So there is one on the list that I will point out to you that, as I told you via DM on Twitter a few weeks ago, he tried to ruin the holidays. He tried to ruin the holidays, but we'll get to that.
I guess that's probably the only thing worse than not being on a massive winning underdog is actually being on the other side and lumping on a 5-1 on or something. We've mentioned his name a couple of times and I've spoken about him a lot on the show in recent weeks for obvious reasons. Joe Joyce over Daniel Dubois, quoted here as 350, so 7-2. Personally speaking, my main stake on him was on the 3-1. I didn't get the 7-2. This is my favourite bet of 2020, and I was talking to pretty much anyone who'd listen since March, end of March. I was meant to go and see the show early April. Between then and the time we finally got the fight on, I never kind of went off the bet. I thought it was a fantastic bet, a great matchup for Joyce at that price. Obviously, if you're going to give me even money on both, I picked Dubois. But Joyce was undervalued massively and really sort of disrespected at the odds that went on him. Were you one of those who got on the underdog there?
I was, but I have to thank you for this. And one of the things I always do is I try to listen to, you know, I think all information can help. As you know, I'm not only a guest on your show today, but a big fan, and listen to the episodes. And I thought the episode that you did on Joyce was fantastic. And I would give a disclaimer to everyone that, you know, a lot of this is not always about following everything you hear on a show. What I always try to tell people, and this is going to go not only for wagering on fights, but anything in life, is you listen, you analyze what you've heard, and then you make your own decisions. You know, the podcast, as you say, you don't take paid advertisements. You're not here selling picks. You're giving information for either side. You're putting out there what the probability is, and then it's up to you to make that call. I thought you were brilliant with that late rounds knockout. I told you that Teofimo was underrated in his boxing ability. Well, I would say Joe Joyce obviously was underrated in both his boxing ability and what has proven to be, let's be honest, one of the great heavyweight chins, because he took some heavy, heavy shots in this fight. I was thrilled with this result, Joyce over Dubois. Both fighters showed a lot. I wasn't as sharp as you to get down on that late rounds knockout, or rather I don't have the availability of that as many of, that's a whole nother discussion that struggles as far as the American market and round props, which Jonathan Lear and I are trying to desperately get more attention to out here so that we can have more offered. But I was able to get Joyce at a similar price to Tio at the plus 350 mark, and I was very pleased with that.
The other fights we've got at the bottom of the list here, in terms of the size of the underdog that won, I'll skim through a few of them, and we'll go into detail on a few more. Umar Sadiq, plus 330 against Cody Davis, so 10-3 in fractional odds. Robin Krasniqi, plus 400, 4-1 against Dominic Bozil. Nakatani just last weekend against Felix Verdejo, 4-1 underdog. Very interesting, actually, how many of these have come about in the last week or two, putting this, you know, looking at this list. Lyndon Arthur, 5-1 over Anthony Yard was another one. Mark Leach, 6-1 plus against Kez Ashfaq. And another one, recent one, 54-0, Wan Heng, lost to a 6-1 underdog. Ghost, do you want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, interesting fight in Thailand. Very close. Argument could be made for Wan Heng winning the fight. He came on very hard down the stretch, but it did happen to, as it played out, it was WBC open scoring for this bout. And the underdog, Panya Pradabsbri, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in at plus 600. Many of the sharps I knew had grabbed that early. And he was up through open scoring throughout the bout. So very interesting fight. You can say what you will about maybe the politics behind the scenes there in Thailand, possibly trying to put up, there were some rumors and whispers about trying to put over the younger fighter, Wang Heng coming back from retirement and then coming back to fight, which is usually a red flag. But as we saw over the weekend, Nakatani proved that that's not always the case. But in regards to Wang Heng, he did lose that fight, losing his undefeated record, goes to 54-1, certainly an all-time Hall of Fame career, and an interesting kind of a diehards fighter, right? The insiders were always following him throughout the years, and he was always a large favorite. So you figure at some point he was going to lose that O, and the plus 600 that was available, which was, I think, far less by fight time. Very, very enjoyable for those who backed it early. And I don't want to sound like your dumb American guess, so let me convert that here. That would be implied probability 14%, right? Plus 600 American odds. So quite the upset there
just,
in Thailand.
Just above,
above, okay. So that was just recently. And it is interesting how many of these were added just recently. You and I can discuss a couple stats at the end. But yeah, a few of these on the list here. I have about 30 or so fights listed for this year's upset list, and several very recently, and that was one of them.
I think it's interesting what you said about the point you made earlier about the approach to betting in general, but you know, let's say boxing betting for obvious reasons, and it's with regard to assessing the evidence, not just from yourself and not just the evidence, you know, what you kind of perceive to be the eye test, you know, what you take from watching tapes, how good you think a fighter is, whether you're kind of keeping your own ratings, whether you're taking word from guys in the know or guys you respect. And I mean, in any other realm, it would be called critical thinking, wouldn't it? You know, when thinking back all those years to when I was at university, you know, critical thinking was writing an essay based on the research you took from textbook A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and you put that all together to get your own kind of synthesized result. And really, betting is, in a much less academic way, the same kind of thing. You're kind of taking what you can from wherever you can, putting it all together and coming to your own conclusion. And that's, I think, the best way. You know, you have to take that kind of individual responsibility for it, but you can do so based on kind of wealth of knowledge from wherever you can get it, really.
Absolutely. If you'll allow me a little rant here for a second, I just think it's so important because I listen, you know, to as much as I can, but I really trust in those who are going to have their own opinion. And it does drive me a little crazy, you know, that the two things, I try to be very cordial and open to discussion on Twitter. And I try to, you know, we get a lot of questions and I try to respond to anyone who's fair back. But the two things that drive me nuts, Tom, and this is, it happens almost every week, is the first question is, can you give me every play you're making in boxing this weekend and how much you're betting on it? Well, no, I can't do that. And the second is, what time exactly will Canelo walk to the ring tonight? Well, you know, you can probably Google that yourself, and I probably can't do that either because I'm doing a lot of yourself. Those are the two things that drive me a little bit crazy. You know, I call it the baby wipes brigade, right? It's like, you know, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I've changed diapers for almost 5 years now. And it's, you know, you don't need the baby wipes. You don't need your handheld. You know, the best guys and the guys that I respect the most, Lear, Tom Craze, you know, Graham, who's been around for years, Graham Houston at Fight Writer One, RC Fights, who you had on recently, who I think is a brilliant young guy, who just, you know, a lot of times the best place that I come to is talking to you guys and saying, okay, well, you know, I see it that way, but I don't necessarily agree with that. You tell me your side of things. Let me hear that out. Let me see what my eyes and ears are telling me, and let me come to my own conclusion whether I need to pass or whether I really agree with Tom and I'm going to load up on this one. And that's where you're going to get better at this. And that's where you're going to gain more respect. And that's where you're going to be able to hit some of these dogs on this list each year. But it does drive me crazy when people want it all laid out for them there. I'm telling you, the best cappers I know and the most successful ones are the ones that work the hardest, but also the ones that are willing to discuss and in the end, come to their own conclusion, not just follow other people.
Talking of guys I respect, Jim Karras, I think was the first one on my timeline to post up the idea of opposing Wang Heng and getting on. Again, your tie will be better than mine, guys. But Prada Rossi, I don't know, I'm you know.
Jim deserves credit for that one, absolutely.
Yeah, let's call him Panya. The 6-1 underdog, he posted it up and it was one of those, you talk about critical thinking, I looked at him and thought, nah, not, you know, he's not... This is Wang Heng, 54-0. This should be routine. And I didn't look into it much more, to be honest. It was kind of having a busy week and Thai midweek boxing was not high on my agenda. And then, of course, it came in and you think, well, how's your luck? But yeah, like you said, I know a few people were on him and that was, it's a big upset. You know, that's just outside the top 10. And as you say, against a Hall of Fame guy, if it was in any other, you know, any other nationality, that would be much bigger news than it was. And obviously if it was much higher up the weight classes as well. Jez Smith versus Ben Ridings, Jez Smith 550. We had Ozzie Smith on the show a few weeks ago and he was on Jez at the big price. Was that one that you got involved with?
I did not. I missed out on this one. And that was brilliant when you listen back to Ozzy's breakdown of that. And he was spot on with that. And again, I think Americans probably will make the gripe that they had a limited market on this. But for those in the UK, this was obviously not only a wrong line, but you could argue a flipped favorite, which is so rare to come by. And yep. I thought Ozzy was absolutely brilliant with this breakdown. And plus 550, boy, when you look back on that, never should have been the case. Very rarely this year were mistakes made like that. The odds maker who sets most of these lines is incredibly sharp. And I don't even know, to be honest, when I say limited market, I don't think he set that line. I think that one line was set elsewhere possibly, but I was not on that one. Did you get a piece of Jez Smith over Ben Ridings?
No, I certainly did not. And that price did not hang around very long either. It was one of those that, you know, being deep on an undercard, it was priced up, I think, on the Thursday afternoon. And, you know, the 550 was gone very, very quickly. Jack Cullen, 6-1 plus against John Doherty. Now, Sod's Law, I posted up a tweet just before that show started. And it was a little bit tongue in cheek, but I said, you know, who's the British fighter you're most looking forward to develop over the next few years? And if it's not John Doherty, why the hell not? Something like that. Of course, Jack Cullen, who had kind of, I really liked when he first kind of came onto the scene, if that's what you want to call it, beat John Harding Jr. and then kind of underwhelmed, you know, was outclassed against Felix Cash. John Doherty, hugely impressed by. I think he's, you know, again, fighter with great amateur experience. I still think he's going to do really, really well, but his style is such that he will... at this point in his career come unstuck against guys of another certain style. And obviously Doherty has plenty to work on there. Now, I backed Doherty for a reasonable stake. It wasn't my biggest loss of the year, but it was one where it was probably my biggest loss at a shorter, what am I trying to say? My biggest loss on a short price favourite. I needed Doherty outright and inside the distance as well. And of course, Jack Cullen, 6-1, got the decision. Ghost, I believe you're in a similar boat.
This was the one, Tom. This was the guy that got me, Mr. Doherty. All respect to you, but you tried to ruin the holidays. And thankfully, a few weeks later, Joe Joyce came back and saved Christmas. But boy, this was a bad one for me. We own our losses. And just to let you know how I go about these things, I rarely do this, but I had used him in a couple accumulators over, that line had been out for maybe a week. So I think it had led over 2 weeks to quite a big payout. And one of those astonishing fights where he gets the first round knockdown. And I think I'm having breakfast with my boy in the kitchen and it's only a 10 round fight. And you're thinking, oh, a 10-8 first round, we're going to cruise on home here. And then Jack Cullen showed what Jack Cullen's made of, and what a performance. And I was very wrong on this. I had been very impressed with Doherty stopping Fox, who had proven to be a tough out, Anthony Fox. And so he had me completely fooled. I also think Doherty, he admitted as such on his Twitter account later after the fight, definitely took, he overlooked Cullen, and he admitted as such. I had made the decision in my mind that Doherty coming down in weight and Cullen going up in weight was going to be tough for Cullen to deal with the power. A nightmare scenario for me as those 10 rounds played out, because Cullen pulled ahead, and it was still actually on the table until about, I think, the eighth, where Doherty was very hurt. And I was hoping for maybe a Hearn special on those scorecards. That's one of those ones where in America, you get a refund on the draw. So I was begging for an empate, as they say in Spanish. I was begging for a draw on the cards there. It was not to be my biggest loss on the year, certainly. Let's see here. I'm looking at our list here. Plus 625 on Cullen, best priced over Doherty. I did want to mention that I'm not totally out of my mind. I was not laying the closing prices of a minus 950 in American odds, which let me do that really quickly for you here. Minus 950 probability. Do I have this right, Tom, of about, 90%, 90.47. So I had started to lay that in accumulators at around minus 350 on open, much more reasonable, but it didn't work out. So certainly I would say for me personally, the most stunning result of the year, but good on Jack Cullen. We learn from that. And we always learn from our losses and we assess going forward, both fighters. I think we learned a lot about both fighters, and that comes in, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, just around the top 10 of the biggest upsets of 2020.
One of the higher profile upsets of the year, and probably, at least in my mind, the knockout of the year, Alexander Povetkin, plus 350. So 7-2, 3-1-ish against Dillian White at the end of the Matchroom Fight Camp. One of the upsets of the year in terms of stature, if not odds.
Yeah, a couple thoughts on this fight. I'm glad you brought it up, because Povetkin over White, I would say definitely, I would agree, slightly the knockout of the year over Davis, Tank Davis and LSC, unless Triple G or Canelo does something spectacular this weekend, but we'll get to that later. But those would be the two for me. Interesting, of my list here of upsets, I think the two, as you would call them, heart attack fights for the year, if you were on either side, the two heart attack fights, I would say, would be Povetkin White, and obviously the recent Nakatani versus Verdejo. That's a rough beat if you had Felix Verdejo, and that is a very, very rough beat if you back Dillian White. I did not put any money on this fight, but I have to give Ryan Scalia, a good friend of mine out in Canada. Hi, yep. Ryan. Excellent pick on Povetkin. He had told me adamantly for months that Povetkin would stop White. He was proven correct, but there was a lot of drama in that fight. I mean, I'm sure you remember the live odds were drastically in White's favor, and out of nowhere, the knockout came. So definitely one to mention. I'm having on my list here, I'm showing about plus 350 odds. I think I read that it was available maybe even a little bit better at UK shops. So good on your listeners who got down on Povetkin. Astonishing, certainly, the way it ended. And I would say definitely memorable, not only for the knockout, but the upset and the idea that it sets up a very intriguing rematch. And when you think about Povetkin winning, Joe Joyce winning, Usyk now in the picture, I'm very excited. Joshua's performance, obviously, over the weekend and the possibility of Fury. Very excited about the heavyweight division as we move forward and hopefully fans return in 2021.
Do you remember what the, I haven't got it written down here, and I don't want to kind of just hazard a guess, the live price that Povetkin hit after that kind of torrid round that he had? And, you know, for all the world, White would have been a huge favorite to go out and stop Povetkin in that round.
I do, Tom. The wonderful database that is Twitter in, mm-hmm. in my history, on my timeline, on August 22nd of 2020, I will read you. Bet365 hanging plus 2,800 American live on Povetkin to win by knockout seconds before he ices White. Incredible turn of events.
Going down the kind of main contenders here of the upsets of the year, it doesn't take very much before you get to actually what are quite small, I would say minor upsets. And I say minor in terms of the price more than, you know, the actual stature. You know, you need to go only about 30 fights or so down before you're looking at the underdog being 5-2, so plus 250, 2-1, 3-1. It's an upset, but for those prices to be featuring that high on an end of year list, my theory here is that because we've had, or at least part of the theory, because we've had the lockdowns in the UK, particularly, we've had the travel restrictions. And so what that meant is that you had better match fights because promoters weren't flying in guys from overseas. They were having to use small hall fighters and stepping them up onto main big network shows. And a lot of fighters were making their TV debuts as a result. Now, you had people like Jez Smith who were massively underrated, but you also had fights that were put together, very kind of very much undercard fights, but when you look at them, they're really well matched. And so I think, whereas the guys, if they're an A-side, would normally have been fighting, you know, some kind of Hungarian part-timer and gone off at a, you know, 1-33 favorite or 1-50 favorite or worse, suddenly they're in a position where, you know, they're 1-2 favorite, you know, minus 200, or they're, you know, 1-3 or something like that. And suddenly the scope of prices gets much shorter, doesn't it? Because you're not, you know, by nature, if you're not having big favorites, you're not having so many big underdogs. And particularly with the smaller pool of fights that we've had, like, you know, like I said, 60, 70% less in the US and the UK compared to 2019. To me, that goes some way to explaining why, not the fact that fewer underdogs have been winning, just because there have been fewer opportunities at the prices for those upsets to happen.
100% agree with your theory. Travel restrictions, smaller pool. But I did want to read you a couple stats. This is fascinating when you compare to last year. And I do understand when you read Gray's BoxRec stats up front to start the show here, that we are dealing with a pandemic. There were three to 4 months off. We're dealing with a much smaller pool, as you said. But it is interesting when I read you a few of these stats. In 2019 set a new record for upsets with better than plus 300 in a 12-month span. There were 60 of them. 2019 set a record for upsets with better than plus 1,000 in a 12-month span. There were 26 upsets in 2019 with upsets better than 1,000. Tom, this is hard to believe, but in spoiler alert, there are only 3 upsets in 2020 above plus 1,000. So with 10-1 on odds, only 3 on the list here, and only 1 occurring during the post-pandemic time. Like I said, this year's list only has about 30 or so upsets overall. And I've even changed the threshold. In the past, the threshold, meaning the bottom number, I would stop our list usually annually around plus 400, and I would never drop below that. I've had to drop our list down to about plus 250 this year just to have enough upsets to make the list. So I absolutely agree with your theory. I also have to give a shout out again to the Bet365 odds maker. I think he's been incredibly sharp, and I think that also has a lot to do with why we are seeing less mistakes or less upsets, because I think the fights are competitive and he's setting them accurately, very accurately. But as we go through the list here, there were a couple quite large ones, and it's interesting to see when they occurred. As you said, as we get towards the top, we're going all the way back to January, but we'll get there.
Okay, so with my best radio DJ voice then, number 10 of the biggest upsets of 2020, Joshua Franco, plus 650, so 13-2 best price against Andrew Maloney. This was back in June, one of the first major fights in the top rank bubble. And actually, it was the second big upset in successive weeks. Maloney was, you know, obviously a big favorite, 21-0, Franco 16-1-2. He dropped Maloney in the mid rounds, won a unanimous decision. They did rematch, of course, last month, fought to a no decision, obviously stopped after just a couple of rounds on an accidental headbutt, or so it was determined.
Yeah, I got a couple notes on this one. Fascinating. Obviously, the plus 3650. I'm sorry. Obviously, the plus 650 odds there that I've listed on Franco. Obviously, that's the opening. That was not available when fight time arrived. Again, shout out to Jim Cross, who I believe was early in saying that that line was off. Very good grab there. And I know several people who were on Franco at the plus 650. I was not. I was not a believer in Franco coming off the trilogy that he had with Golden Boy. I thought that I saw flaws there. And I thought Maloney would beat him in this spot. I didn't lay the price of Maloney, but I kept my powder dry. I did not lay a bet down on this fight. And I really regretted it as the fight played out. And Franco treated it as his Super Bowl, as his big moment in life, and won a deserved close decision. Obviously, my thoughts now with the rematch controversy and the trilogy is this sets up a fascinating situation as far as we know neither fighter is going to be a 6-1 underdog as we see that fight in 2021. Obviously, location will have a lot to do with the odds. But as far as who I think will win that rematch, well, you and I can we'll wait for that on a future episode. I won't quite give my lean on who I think would win that trilogy fight. But certainly, Franco performed incredibly well. And congrats to all who got the top 10, number 10 upset of the year, Franco over Maloney by decision, plus 650.
You know what? I've just looked through this top 10 and realized that I have none of them. I backed none of these underdogs I backed in the top 10. Now, if there's anything more depressing than that I've come across in the past 10 minutes, God.
Let me take quite a look here. You and me both, sir. You and me both. I can say that I was on Joyce. I can say I was on Teofimo, but I do not have a wager in this top 10. So congrats to those who did.
There's a few as I said, in that chasing pack, you know, Charlton, you know, Joe Joyce and, you know, the like, but yeah, when it gets to the really big odds, and we're going to get into these in a minute. Yeah. It's bare bones, really. Number nine, Roama Angulo, plus 700. So 7-1 upset Anthony Sims Jr. That's back in January, which feels like an awfully long time ago. Super middleweight. Angulo was at least a familiar name in that he lost to Gilberto Ramirez. Sims Jr. was a 20-0 Matchroom USA prospect, really big puncher, but had nothing on his record for a guy who was 20-0. Angulo split decision over 10. Number eight is one that not a lot of people are going to remember, but this is one, it was another fight back in January, and I remember seeing this on my Twitter feed like it was last week, which kind of sums up 2020. I really thought this fight was more recent than January. It was a guy called, I'll get this right, Mponda Kalunga, a 7-1 underdog against a Canadian called Clovis Drolet. The fight was in Montreal, Canada. Not a big deal to anyone really outside Canada, but Drolet was getting a little bit of a reputation, a growing reputation, I should say, in his homeland. Kalunga, 7-2, kind of a rugged journeyman type, dropped Clovis Drolet twice and got a split decision win. Now, I know this one, again, I think it was Jim Karras. Shout out to Jim, you're doing quite well here. Who flagged this. And I think there was a little bit of conversation that I remember seeing saying, yeah, this is wrong. Kalunga is a solid guy. And maybe it was Ryan Scali as well who mentioned it. Do you recall the kind of thought process going into that one? I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
Yes, you are. And Jim and Ryan, and shout out to Ryan and Jason, who do the Great Fight North podcast in Canada. A great listen. And yes, this was one that Ryan had mentioned to me for a while, that Kalunga should not be that big an underdog. I think you described it perfectly. Rugged journeyman. It's hilarious to look at BoxRec, Tom, and see that, you know, Drolet dropped in rounds 3 and 4, and yet it was a split decision in an 8-rounder. Right. Yeah. So clearly they were trying to get the hometown boy home there, but Kalunga had just done too much for him to get screwed on the cards there. But Kalunga had been known as a rugged journeyman, and Actually, he has not fought since. So that occurred all the way back, believe it or not, in January 25th, the number 8 upset of the year. And that is Colunga in Canada, plus 700. So congrats to those who backed him by split decision in an 8-rounder.
Number 7 then, Mike Planier, again, a 7-1 underdog prevailing here versus Joshua Greer Jr. Again, back in June, again, back in the top rank bubble. This was the first big upset post-lockdown on a major card. Down at Super Bantam, Greer was 22-1-1, starting to make a bit of a name for himself. Not many people saw this one coming, I think, and it was nice in that it set the tone for the kind of weird time that was post-lockdown boxing, because you had Planier over Greer, you had Franco over Maloney, and suddenly was like, man, where are all these upsets coming from? This is great. Is it because there are no crowds? Is it because the atmosphere is so different?
Planier versus Greer was a fascinating one. Shout out to Knucklehead Sean, who also, in addition to having Planier, of course, has the great Casimiro, right? Mm. Who is another, and of course, his ties to Pacquiao. So he has a very good read on the inside camp there with Planilla's chances. And he had been saying that Planilla would pull this upset, as did many insiders. I didn't see it. I wasn't smart enough to get on the plus 700 by Planilla, which obviously wasn't 700 by Fight Time, but I was smart enough not to back Greer in any sort of accumulator or when his price dropped. I was smart enough at least not to lay the fave there in Greer, who also can be thrown, I think, into the Anthony Sims boat as far as underperforming and not doing enough down the stretch and having close fights. And he had been on people's radars, sharps in the Twitter gambling community, as far as a boxing guy, a fighter to go against. And they got their chance and it paid off. Planilla pulled it off pretty clearly, if I recall, Tom. And again, what you mentioned there about the top rank bubble, it was fascinating because I think people were so eager when this got started again. That was one of the very first big upsets that really felt great for those who backed him and told a lot of people, wow, boxing back and boxing betting is back and this feels great. I remember the excitement online that night. People were very excited about that result, and with good reason. Quite the call if you were on the Filipino there. Mike Planilla plus 700 over Joshua Greer. Great work if you called that.
Number 6 is one I'm going to skim over a bit because, to be honest, I hadn't heard of any of these names, which doesn't sound very good on me, does it? Jose Luis Gallegos plus 750, so 15 to 2 underdog over Ricky Lopez back in January. However many years ago that was, 130 pounds. Actually, neither of these guys have very flashy records. Lagos was 18-8, dropped Lopez, outpointed him. This is just an 8-rounder. The nice bit about this fight is that Gallegos fought twice more this year. I say nice, not nice for him. Fought twice more after this Lopez fight and he lost them both, which just goes to prove that every dog does indeed have his day.
You're listening to The Boxing Betting Show.
Okay, so moving into the top 5 upsets of the year. This one was actually last weekend. So again, we're talking about, seems to be a trend that a lot of these have come quite recently. Clay Collard was upset. Now, Collard has been this year. I remember someone in the a boxing writer tipped him for their fighter of the year, which is obviously absurd, but he has been a bit of a cult hero. He's won three fights straight in the top rank bubble. Part-time boxer / MMA fighter, just signed a new MMA deal. I think that's where he'll be going next. But he was a big favorite against a guy called Quincy Lavallee, who was an 8-1 underdog, plus 800. And Collard finally ran out of steam. He dropped a decision to Lavallee, who was 9-0-1, nothing fancy there. You know, Collard is very much a kind of blue-collar fighter, not the type anyone should be backing at a short price, but that was the price that was up for not very long, I don't think. This is not a fight that many books had odds on at all, and so I'm not sure how many people got the upset here at all, but nonetheless, it's a big price.
Yes, I believe a couple of books just had it very briefly up, and I want to give credit to @Trotman Picks on Twitter, who raised the question to me this week, and I thought, yeah, you know what, that was a big enough upset to add to my annual list, and we'll just put in parentheses limited markets so that people understand, you know, that it wasn't widely available, but it is, for entertainment purposes, quite fun to look back and think how off that line was. You did wonderful with his last name there, so I will just refer to him as Quincy, pulling off the upset at +800. Obviously, we know Collar very overvalued there from, you know, well, several reasons, his activity, his popularity, his upsets that he had previously pulled off, but he was outboxed Saturday and he comes in at the number five upset of the year, Quincy by decision over the popular Clay Collard.
Number four, strangely enough, then, this was also last weekend, last Friday, the 11th of December. They're really testing us with the pronunciations here. I think it's Guarneros, 8.5-1 against Tommy Frank. And this fight was on a Dennis Hobson drive-through show, the first, I think, world first in terms of bring your car to a car park outside the Sheffield Arena, sit in your car and watch some boxing. It was called the Straightener in the Car part of this show. And Tommy Frank was stopped in 8 rounds, albeit via injury, to Guarneros, who not many people fancied. He'd fought Sonny Edwards before and lost a decision. And this kind of upset the apple cart, I think, in terms of the plans for Tommy Frank next year. Did you see this one coming, Ghost?
I did not. This was quite a big upset. Number four on our list this year, Guarneros at +850. I did get a chance to watch the last 4 rounds of this bout. It was live at the same time as the Eggington Theophane card on Channel 5. So I did not see the entire Tommy Frank card, but I've done my research on it. And as I understand, it was quite a bad injury that his corner did have to pull him out. He had been fighting with basically one arm, I think, since the first couple rounds. So a bad break for Tommy Frank and a bad break for his team. But Guarneros kept at it, kept the pressure on, and was able to force the stoppage in the corner, I think, after the eighth and before the ninth round, but quite a large upset that not many saw coming, +850. And I guess we can't quite say without crowds, right? Because it was the drive-through event, but it comes in at number four and an interesting result. And hopefully Frank can come back from that. But one of the only ones on the list here that I see that I can recall, Tom, out of the 30 listed here, where it was actually due to injury that upset occurred.
Yeah. Moving on then to number three in the list of upsets of the year, Petros Anian, let's say, 10-1 underdog over Subriel Mateus way back in February. This is at light welterweight. Mateus was best known, I think, for his win over Maxim Dalyshev, of course, but 15-0, bordering on some kind of contention at 140 as well. But he was dropped in the middle of rounds, and Anian won a unanimous decision, kind of big upset. I think a lot of people were, certainly top rank, were kind of moving him towards some kind of, not necessarily a world title shot, but he wouldn't have been too many away.
Yeah, when I look at this list, this one perhaps shocked me the most because I know quite a bit about Petros. Another fighter out of the Canadian scene, Ryan Scully and I had spoken in depth about him. And Ananyan, I had laid the price on months before to defeat Steve Claggett. He did not defeat Steve Claggett. That was an upset. I had laid about, I'd laid about -250 or so on him to defeat Claggett, and Claggett pulled the upset. So I had come into this fight quite down on Petros, and I was quite high on Subriel Mateus. Had this price been any lower or much lower, I would have considered the favorite here, but thankfully, it was so high that I laid off it. But I watched in shock because it was one of those fights where, as you know, Mateus had come off the tragedy with Dadashev, and he had looked very, very good in this fight for the first few rounds. But Petros dropped him and turned the fight around and did win at +1,000. Interesting note about these two fighters. Petros has had some promotional situations, and he didn't fight for the rest of the year. So Ananyan, someone to keep an eye on, because he took quite a licking to pull that upset. If you can find footage of this fight, it's worth watching, guys. Ananyan versus Mateus, quite a fight from earlier in the year. And I will just make one note on Subriel, who has obviously come back and looked spectacular in defeating Malik Hawkins. Subriel is the only one on this list here, the list this year, Tom, that actually appears twice. And I always love that as a little side note. He appeared as both pulling the upset, opener +350 over Malik Hawkins, but he has the dubious distinction of also being on the upset list for losing to Petros in our number three upset of the year. So congratulations and sorry, Subriel.
Number two then in our upsets of the year, Lucas Santamaria, 12-1 plus 12.50 upset over Michael Fox. This is in August at welterweight. Fox was 22-1 coming in. Santa Maria just 10-1-1. I thought nobody of note, but dropped Fox early and went on to win another clear decision.
I thought Fox would win a decision here. I did not bet either side again because the price was so high. But Lucas Santa Maria, one of those fights, it was a late night PBC fight here in the States. And one of those fights where round one starts, Tom, and you think, oh boy. Oh boy, these odds are very wrong. He dropped Fox early and he kept the pressure on. I would say again to your listeners, go out of your way to try and find this either on YouTube or Daily Motion or somewhere where you can find this. This is worth watching, this fight. 10 rounds, all action. Fox just didn't have the power to hold Santa Maria off. Santa Maria, quite a prospect in his own right. And he actually went on to lose to Paul Kroll recently, another good prospect in another debatable fight. Santa Maria, best available odds, plus 1250. Shout out to Matt Golnick on Twitter. Matt, I hope I'm saying your last name right. A very good follow. And he was one of the few that I knew, in fact, probably the only one I knew, who got the plus 1250 on Santa Maria. A very, very sharp guy. And, you know, that's one situation. A lot of this list, Tom, you and I have looked back on and said, oh, Planilla over Josh Greer, or Nakatani over Verdejo. Those odds never stayed that way. Well, these odds actually stayed that way. These odds didn't change. This was one where not much money came in on Santa Maria. So not many people saw this coming. If you did, huge congrats. The second biggest upset of 2020 is Lucas Santa Maria upsetting Michael Fox on PBC.
Number one then, drum roll. And it would be interesting if anyone listening is thinking, well, yeah, obviously this one is coming next. Without looking, if someone said, what was the upset of the year? Off the top of my head, I don't know. I knew this was top three, maybe. I felt that something maybe like Santa Maria Fox or something under the radar might have jumped over it, just because it's not that big a price to be top of the list. But as you said, it's one of those years where we haven't had a, you know, 30-1 underdog win. It just hasn't happened. Again, way back in January, this was on a PBC card. It was a big one, actually. It was a big fight. Jason Rosario beat Julian Williams in 5 rounds as a 15-1 underdog, so plus 1,500. Obviously, Williams coming off a very big win at light middleweight over Jarrett Hurd, but had nothing for Rosario on the night at all. I've mentioned, and you mentioned it earlier, Ghost, the concept of the list, you know, the watch list as a better, and saying, okay, fighters who are on the list that I think are vulnerable, I think would be worth opposing at big prices. And it pains me to say that Julian Williams was one of those for me. There was a lot of noise over the fight of against her because it was a great fight, or at least a very good fight to watch. But I wasn't totally convinced, and he was on that list for a reason. And Rosario, I looked at, and there wasn't much to go on. And the thing is that sometimes a price can be so big that you think someone knows something that you don't. And I'm looking at Rosario and thinking, well, he's bigger. He can clearly punch. He's got a stupid nickname. Maybe that's what put me off. But I'm just thinking, if he's that big, maybe I'm reading this wrong and maybe Williams should win this easily. And so I left it. I looked at it and I left it. And of course, that came back to haunt me the next morning when it's not a fight I stayed up for in the UK. Loaded my browser and saw Rosario had stopped Williams in 5 rounds. And that stung, but that is as close to the involvement on the upset of the year as I got, which is to say not very. Ghost, did you have any better luck?
I did not, but you had my sentiments exactly. You read my mind. You know, sometimes that's a great quote. When the price is so high, you're thinking, does somebody know something that I do not hear? And it throws you off. You know, you said Julian was on your list. Anthony Sims was a guy on my list, and we missed out on this year on cashing in on against these guys. So congrats to anyone who hit this. I do have an interesting stat for you. As you said, plus 1,500 in previous years, that wouldn't seem like it would make number one on the list. I was looking back, and when you look back at 2019, Cancio over Machado, plus 2,000. Pablo Cesar Cano over Jorge Linares, plus 2,000. I even went back to do some research for your show today, and I looked back a few more years. In 2018, we had Francisco Patera plus 3,000 over Lewis Ritson from Tanzania. Hassan Mwakinyo, plus 3,000 over Eggington. So as you can see in previous years, let's not forget Garrido over Bradley Saunders at plus 4,000 in 2015. Yvonne Mendy, plus 2,500 to beat cool Luke Campbell. So my point in reading you these stats is previous years, much, much bigger upsets, plus 2,000, plus 3,000, plus 4,000. So when you look at plus 1,500, Rosario over Williams, you're a bit surprised that that does reach number one. Yeah, I have to tell you that when I put my list together, and perhaps that's due to the pandemic and the fact that this was all the way back on January 18th, I did not think this would end up being number one. But here we are. Rosario over Williams ends up being at plus 1,500, the number one upset of the year. Congrats to those of you who backed it. I can't say I did, Tom. I wish I had. I can't say I did. But that was definitely an interesting one and a shocker. And he, of course, has gone on in a game effort to lose his title to Charlo. But something to keep in mind going forward, and that it'll be interesting to see next year if we can get something above plus 2,000. Pretty interesting to me that the biggest upset of the year was only, well, I say only, right, but was only 15-1, different than other years.
Jason Rosario, you may have lost your WBC, WBA, IBF belts back in September, but you are the Boxing Betting Show Underdog of the Year for 2020. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Delighted to say that Ghost is going to stick around and help me preview the big fight of the weekend. Actually, there are two. You've got Golovkin, Zerameta on the Friday night, but Canelo Alvarez versus Callum Smith on Saturday night is one of the most intriguing fights to be made at super middleweight. Alvarez here then is a firm favourite, as you would expect. Very best price on him at the moment is 2-9, so minus 450, which gives an implied probability of 82%. That's for Bet Victor at time of recording, which is the middle of fight week, for reference. What I would say about that price, 2-9, 450, is that is kind of clinging on. There is one firm at the moment going with that price on Canelo, and I expect that to go or be gone very soon, and possibly by the time you're listening to this. The general industry price on Canelo is 1-6, minus 600, 86% implied. And a few going 1-5 as well, spread X, William Hill. So that's 83%. What that means then for Smith is a top price of 9-2, plus 450. So implied 18% chance. That's with the aforementioned Bet365. General industry price says 4-1, plus 400 at 20%. And as short as 7-2, and actually even as short as 3-1, I noticed there. Bet Victor giving him a 25% chance if you were not to shop around at all. The draw between 20 and 28-1, between 3.5% and 5% implied probability. Now, the fight was obviously fairly recently announced. There's only 4 weeks of data to look at in terms of where the money's been going. But inevitably, and to the surprise of actually no one, will be all the money has been for Canelo so far. Opened at 2-9, and that's shortened now to 1-6. As I said, one firm holding on to the 2-9. I wouldn't be surprised if that continues to contract and Smith's price continues to drift. I think the bigger bets now coming in will be for Canelo. Even in the UK, I don't think Smith has got enough of a kind of a backing as such for kind of patriotic money to come in. I think the bigger bets will be for Canelo. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go off at minus 700, so 1-7 or even a little bit shorter, but certainly 1-6 I think will be steady, and I don't think we'll be going the opposite way up to say 1-4 or 1-5 more generally. Some key questions then. I think it's accurate to say that this is Canelo's first test at the weight, of course. Kind of in the meantime, you know, he fought Rocky Fielding, went up to light heavy to beat Kovalev. No problems there. How does he fare here against necessarily the consensus, but the number one guy at super middle? And is it a favourable style matchup? I'm going to pitch that to you, Ghost. We've seen Canelo chop down Fielding. No one's saying Fielding's as good a fighter as Smith, but he hurt him to the body very early. And big question for me here, Canelo, one of the best body punchers around. We saw John Ryder have so much success in their fight, and I felt that was a fight that John Ryder won very clearly. Canelo is of a similar stature, similar height to Ryder, but does every single thing better. Can Smith adjust to that, or is he in for the same kind of night, but rougher still? And what do you make of those prices? Where would you have Canelo as a favorite.
Canelo Alvarez versus Callum Smith to end our boxing year. We will see if Callum can add his name, right, to the upsets list before we put it online next week. I have so many emotions when I hear the name Canelo because I am sitting in my office here and I look at the poster of Gennady and Canelo, the first fight. And I have a very clear memory of that draw, and it still hurts. But I have that poster up there because it reminds me of how improved this guy is over the years and how much I didn't respect him and how much I do now. He has forced me to respect him. You know, there's fighters over the years that we have a very good read on, and I've had an okay read on Canelo, but the person who really has had a fantastic read on Canelo, as I've told you in the past, is you, Tom. You've had a very good read on Canelo, both Triple G fights. Let's not forget that I believe you were on draws, splits, and majorities in those two fights, two big winners for you. He's a fighter that you've tended to just have a very good read on. So I'm going to be listening carefully throughout the week to your thoughts on this one. But as far as mine, here are my thoughts. I actually was a loser on the Canelo versus Kovalev because I backed him by decision, and I was a little disappointed to see Kovalev fold in the waning moments of that one. So the question here is your question to me. Yes, I agree with the pricing. I think the Ryder fight told us a lot about Callum. And also, if you think back to the late notice, short notice, Nicky Holskin fight. I was not thrilled with Callum's performance against kickboxing legend Nicky Holskin, who managed to take Callum 12. A lot of people don't remember that one, but I saw flaws in Callum during that bout as well. Canelo has become very much like Floyd in that he's one of the best matchmakers, in addition to one of the best fighters in the sport. He's very carefully made his selection here, I believe. And I do agree with your thoughts. I don't think the price is going to come in Callum. In fact, many of my friends in the UK that I've talked to and opinions I respect, believe that the price will travel, will get shorter, as you said, maybe touching minus 700, 800, I don't know, we'll see. As far as the fight itself and how it breaks down, we have an over-under set at 9.5, and it's been juiced a little bit to the over. So the question is, the body work that you were referring to, Canelo has become a master body puncher, or rather always has been, but particularly he has carried that up in weight. We've seen his ability to take big shots. This fight at 168 pounds, obviously. Callum, not always great at working with the jab and does tend to give up his height at times and fight inside. Can he take the body shots? Ryder definitely laid the blueprint, as you said. So I don't see a way that you can lay the price here on Canelo. I think you've got to come at it from another angle, which you and I can discuss. Can Callum win a decision? Can Callum make it 9.5 rounds? I tend to think so, but can Canelo win a decision? That tends to be the result I'm thinking of in my head at this point.
For me, there are a few big questions here. We've never really seen Smith hurt as such. Ryder put him under all sorts of pressure. As you know, Smith didn't like it on the inside, and he fought Ryder's fight. Was he surprised that Ryder was that good? Maybe. Was he a little bit complacent? Probably less of a chance that he was complacent. I think Ryder is better than a lot of people give him credit for. It's very hard to me to sit here and say I can imagine Canelo being either blitzed out early or, and we'll get onto this shortly, or being kind of battered and worn down and stopped late on. And so then you flip it around and say, well, okay, maybe Smith is, you know, he's 6'3" tall, 6'2", 6'3". Canelo's 5'8". The logical plan for Smith would be to box on the outside, use the range, use the jab. But he's in Texas, and getting a decision against Canelo is tough at the best of times. But in Vegas and Texas, he's, you know, that's been a very happy hunting ground for him in the past. Say fortunate or happy, depending on your point of view. Can Smith win a kind of pecking away type decision? Can he win it if it's tight? You know, in the past, as you said, I've done well on both the Golovkin fights because I dutched the draw, the split, and the majority in favor of Canelo because I, you know, if it's tight, he's the guy who's gonna get the nod. I'm not tempted to do that at all here, to be honest. I think Canelo has a much easier night than certainly the Golovkin fights. It's a very, very good fight, but when you look at routes to victory, Canelo nearly 2-1 to win a decision, like you said. The big question for me here is, can Smith be hurt? Is he durable enough? Or is this a fight where Canelo stoppage is the way to go? Just inside even money at 10-11, so minus 110.
Yeah, I can't see it ending early. So like you said, I think the question here as the week goes on is, do you feel comfortable taking the decision at those nice odds, or can Canelo break him down to the body? I will say that as we're recording here, the Matchroom has tweeted out the first face-off, and I may be wrong about how the odds move, because this height discrepancy is, it's quite jarring when you look at it.
In fact,
the Boxing Asylum guys just referred to it on Twitter as Hey Valuev-esque. So it's quite interesting to see how much bigger, and I don't know if that's the camera angle, but that's quite a stark image that they've just released online. Another note I had for you on this is, and I think this is good to note for your listeners, as we've slowly seen, Tom, the last week or so with Errol Spence and Anthony Joshua, these are places where they've allowed 1,000 or 2,000 or a couple thousand fans in, or in the case of Spence, a little bit more in Texas, where they seem to have their own rules in Texas. And let's not forget, this is where this fight is taking place, Canelo and Callum. It is interesting to note, and something I've picked up on, we have to remember, these judges, both in the UK and the US, have been working for the last 9 months in empty arenas. And they have, you know, we're all human. There has to be a really, it has to affect these guys when all of a sudden, after 9 months, you're judging about, and every punch in that arena is being cheered for Anthony Joshua, for Errol Spence, for Canelo Alvarez. You have to think that the cards are stacked against Smith in that sense, even if it's not stacked beforehand, in the sense that just the sound of that after 9 months of silence. What's your thoughts on that? Because when I was watching the Joshua fight and the Spence fight, I did have that thought that, wow, you know, they are so excited to be there that even though it's not a loud crowd, it's almost more impactful because the small vocal majority is so much more easily heard than just a wall of sound in a big arena.
Yeah, I think certainly, or you know, in terms of recency, the 1,000 at Wembley for Joshua, I thought made a big difference. I'm not saying Joshua would have struggled without him, but it did feel, again, like a Joshua home fight. It clearly wasn't 90,000 at Wembley, but it was vocal. And obviously, you know, obviously the judges weren't needed, but I think it takes away that variable. I think Joshua performed like he would have done in front of a bigger crowd. Take crowds away completely, that's a different question. And so I think even with something, that counts for an awful lot. And in terms of influencing the judges, potentially, Canelo is the biggest, you know, the biggest star in boxing. So he's going to have a potential to lean there anyway. But with, you know, with a very pro Canelo crowd there, I think Smith has got his work cut out. We've mentioned the ways Canelo would win there. The problem is there's no real trend with how he gets it done. And I'm going to caveat this by saying he's kind of, obviously, you know, he's been bouncing around three different weight classes now and a range of abilities in terms of his opponents, you know, from Fielding to Kovalev to Jacobs. You know, looking back at his last five, a draw, a split decision, a TKO, a UD, and a KO for Kovalev. It's kind of all over the place, and there's no obvious trend there that you can say, well, yeah, I would expect him. You can look at the Kovalev fight and say, well, you know, he went up to Kovalev and went up to light heavyweight to fight Kovalev and had no problem getting rid of him, but he was losing a good share of those rounds as well. And you wonder if Smith has that success and the rounds start closing in, and it gets to, you know, it was round 11, remember. And I know that Canelo would have got, you know, favorable cards regardless, most likely, but will there be a point where time runs out? And if you're looking at Smith and you're saying, well, I'm not going to back him to stop Canelo, because I don't think necessarily that, and I say I'm kind of talking hypothetically here, but if I'm not looking to stop him, and I'm going to go with the idea that he can outbox him and just make it awkward. Smith's decision here is 12-1. So an 8% implied. And if you're looking for trends, it's a bit easier to find it in Smith. Three of his last five have gone to decision: Ryder, Skoglund, Holzgen. Can he pinch this in Texas?
You know, it's possible. And at those odds, you make a good argument. I mean, if you're looking at Smith, I certainly think that's the route that you want to look at, is the long odds on the decision. I do see a longer fight here. I think the question for me is whether or not to take Canelo by decision. But if you are a backer of Smith, certainly that's enticing. The one that I would probably rule out, and we'll see if he makes me look a fool on Sunday morning, but I would rule out the Smith early stoppage. I just think Canelo has proven to be, like you said, he's taken Gennady's best shots. He's proven to be very, very stable in there against world level competition. So the question for me that I'm trying to weigh as I look at the size difference here, as the questions that I'm kind of going to be thinking about over the next couple of days and that your listeners can think about is, do you want to take the long shot on Smith by decision? Or do you think Canelo might possibly be able to get him out of there? I will say that I think Kovalev had a little more wear and tear, certainly, than Smith and was maybe there for the taking. But I won't lie to you. I was quite disappointed that that Canelo took him out. I was liking the odds there on decision. And that might be the way I'm leaning at this point, is maybe Canelo by decision. But this size difference is certainly, it does give you pause. It's certainly interesting. And glancing at these early photos here as we talk here. Very, very interesting fight. I mean, if nothing else, just the visual is going to get people's attention and get people to tune in for sure.
The question for a lot of people is how to get Canelo on side. If you're saying, well, the outright is going to be too short a price for most people to entertain. Canelo stoppage, as you said, 10 to 11, 52%, shortest price, is not much in it, 4 to 5, so minus 125, 5 to 6, so minus 120, 54% around as well, just inside even money across the board, and the decision closing in on 2 to 1 there. You mentioned the over-under, but I just want to touch on the fight to go the distance, and this is where there might be a bit of appeal. I have to say, I'm not bowled away by anything at the moment. It's one of those fights I'm looking at, and much like last weekend, I'm looking at it and thinking, and I say last weekend, I mean the Joshua fight. I'm looking at it and it's not much that jumps out at me as being too off. I think it's quite an efficient market. Fight to go the distance though, odds against 13-8, so that's plus 163, 38% implied that it does go the 12 rounds. And the benefit of that is that you get all three outcomes on side, the Canelo decision, the Smith decision, and of course the draw. And if you're saying, well, Smith, I think, is most likely to win a decision if he wins at all. Canelo, I'm torn between the two. I don't think that's a bad price as such. No, the fight doesn't go the distance, is odds on, of course, factoring in the Canelo stoppage being odds on. Ranges anything from 4 to 9, so minus 225, 69% through to 8 to 15, 65%, so minus 188, and actually up to an odd 7 to 11, which is minus 157. That's with the new Smarket Sportsbook, which I haven't tried out actually. I mean, of the two there, if you're making a choice between yes and no, I think at the prices, yes is the more attractive, isn't it?
Yeah, like you said, very efficient market overall, I have to say. It's very well set here. But I think I would lean to the over. It's interesting when you see Smith's record. I don't want to sound like I'm underselling Callum Smith. Certainly the stoppage of George Groves, very impressive. And he has proven to be the best, at 168. And, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. Am I tempted to take Smith by decision? I personally am not. But if he gets it done, that would be quite the achievement. If you talk to me now, I'm going to say my money is going to be on Canelo Alvarez by 12-round decision. Not that I'm jumping up and down at these prices, but it's fair. I think that's a fair pun.
I've kind of been all over the place with this, really. I think when the first fight was first made, I thought, well, yeah, it's a great fight, but I think Canelo will, I think he'll rip him to the body. I think he will stop him. The closer we get to it, I'm thinking, yeah, could it be cagey? Could it be awkward? Could the size difference really be a factor? And there's a couple of other prices that I'm looking at and weighing up. Canelo, a late stoppage between round 7 and 12, just bigger than 2 to 1, 9 to 4, so plus 225, that Canelo stops Smith late. Again, that would play very similar to the Kovalev pattern, as it were. But probably the price that jumps out at me is the best bet I've seen. And it's not, I don't know if I'm going to back it. And right now I'm not. It's Canelo double chance. And double chance is only available with very few bookmakers. And I don't believe you guys in America have got it at all. But this would be for Canelo to win in round 7 to 12 or by decision. That's with Sky Bet on this side of the Atlantic. One to two, so minus 200 implies 67% that Canelo either wears down Smith late, stops him late by any means, or wins a decision. I think I would say the prices of that happening are bigger than 67%. I think that's a solid play if you're looking for something odds on.
Brilliant play. I actually love that line of thinking, and I'm so jealous of the market out there. I hope that there comes a time where those markets are more widespread. And I know DraftKings is very good on other sports in the United States, but as you know, we're still going through a legalization process here with, I think, 25 or 30 states still to go. We're in the early stages. But, you know, there are certain markets where that's available. That sounds very good to me. Let me say it to you like this. If he does stop Kovalev and then goes on to stop Callum Smith here, boy, the sky's the limit for the prices we're going to be seeing on Canelo against any boxer in the world. And he's already so popular and well-known that you have to factor in, you know, any fighter like with the popularity of an Anthony Joshua or Canelo Alvarez, you're going to have to factor that into the price, certainly. So if he does stop a man this much, bigger than him in the ring and has now found stoppages at 168 and 175, my Lord, Tom, I mean, that will be an absolutely impressive scalp, and the sky's the limit as far as what Canelo can do in the remaining years of his career, but also at the prices we're going to be seeing, I imagine.
Thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been, again, an absolute pleasure talking to you, having you on, and I couldn't think of anyone better to have on to discuss the biggest upsets of the year as well.
It was really great catching up with you, Tom, and thanks to you and all your listeners, and hope to do it again sometime soon. You guys take care and have a great holiday season.
And of course, such is boxing that less than 24 hours after the recording of the Top 10 Upsets countdown, a big shock took place on the undercard of the Tim Zhu fight in Australia on Wednesday. Luke Jackson, who many of you will remember from his game effort against Carl Frampton, was upset by Tyson Lantry, then with a record of 7-3, in a majority decision in what was just a 6th rounder. Again, this was a fight where odds won't have been too widely offered, but Lantry was 14-1 and above in places, so depending on where you place that bet, he would slot in either at number 2 on the list or even better still. And if there's anyone out there who did put money on Lantry, I'd love to hear from you. Let's just say though that Lantry, a featherweight, might just have to fight Jason Rosario, a light middleweight, if he wants to get the esteemed trophy off him. What this proves though is that there's never really a good time to do any of these year-in-review type lists, despite most awards and so on being doled out in December. The sensible time would of course be the January of the new year, but by then the months prior kind of seem like a distant memory at a time when everyone's making resolutions and looking forward with some new focus. I mean, I guess I could have recorded something after the final big show of the year over in Tokyo on New Year's Eve, but firstly, I'd rather not spend my New Year's Eve doing that, and secondly, after the past 9 months or so that everyone's had, nobody really needs to listen to me try to scramble together a live podcast in the last remaining hours of the year. The Boxing Betting Show, of course, will be back in the new year, refreshed and ready for a new challenge after a short Christmas and midwinter break. If you have enjoyed the show this year, please do remember to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts so that you get notified when it returns in a few weeks' time. And if you fancy giving me a small Christmas gift, it takes just a minute of your time to leave a positive review or a rating on Apple Podcasts too. Alternatively, I will accept cash, check, PayPal, Bitcoin, or shopping vouchers for all major retailers. A big thanks to all of my brilliant guests this season: Andy Clark, Chris Lloyd, Steve Lillis, Ron Lewis, Ryland Charlton, RC Fights, Ozzie Smith, Adam Abramowitz, Believing Bruce, and Fight Ghost. Please do remember to gamble responsibly, especially while you're kicking around at home over the holiday season with not much better to do, and do make the most of that downtime if you're lucky enough to have some. And finally then, thank you to all of you for listening. Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year to you all, and see you in 2021.